In just the past few years, we've been hearing a lot about the microbes that live in our guts and how important they can be to our health.
Turns out that we are important to their health, too. And while we may think of what we eat as fuel for our bodies as a whole, we might want to think about what we're feeding those colonies of bacteria, too.
Kim Krautkramer is part of a team that's looking at what effect different diets have on those microbes living inside us. She's an MD, PhD student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Kim, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, let's start with those microbes that are living in our gut. Give us the 101. What are they?
Sure. So I think it's become really clear over the last maybe decade or so that we sort of have almost like a second or another metabolic organ that lives in our gut. And it's actually composed of bacteria, viruses, and fungi. And these sort of bugs provide us as a host with a whole new repertoire of sort of machinery to break down some of the contents in our food that we use for energy, to the extent that, so they have more than 550 times the machinery or enzymes that can break down some of these dietary components, and they actually provide us as a host with about 10% of our sort of calories or energy.
So that's the energy side of it. What do we know about some of their potential and what we're starting to understand? You used the phrase almost another organ within, you know, the organ there, the stomach and the digestive tract. What else can they do that we're starting to get an inkling of?
Yeah, so there's just been an explosion of research in this area, again, over roughly a decade, a little bit more. And what we know now is that these bacteria are actually have been sort of associated and sometimes even causatively linked with a number of sort of human diseases. And so that goes all the way from cardiovascular disease, from lipid disorders, just to sort of the ways as sort of as hosts that we kind of store fat and how that fat works in our bodies. And then really common things like diabetes. And so we know that our gut bacteria are involved in sort of regulating how our bodies respond to a lot of these processes.
Well, you are part of a research looking at the effects of different types of diet on the functioning of these microbes, and you tested a plant-based diet against a quote-unquote more Western diet, which sounds like it was meat and higher fat and sugar. So tell us about how you researched this.
Yeah, sure. So it's been known, it was known prior to our study that the bugs living in our gut are sensitive to what we feed them, and that's largely because sort of what we eat as a host is almost entirely all that they see for food, and so they really depend on their host diet for the vast majority of sort of their energy. And so it was already known when we were going into this study that if you feed a host, you know, either, and this has been shown in both humans and some work done in mice and rats too. But if you alter their diet, you not only alter sort of who's present in the communities, but you also alter kind of what sorts of chemistry these bugs carry out and sort of what products that they make. And so for our study, we wanted to look at sort of what's an ideal diet, which is sort of this more kind of plant-based normal diet for a mouse. Sort of what does that do to the community and how does that change when we feed the host, you know, a pretty unhealthy diet, one that's high in very simple sugars and high in fats.
So when you said we can change the bacteria, the gut bacteria that are present, does that mean that, I mean, this is an obvious question, but that these gut bacteria, you know, live, die, and renew, and then different ones join, that it really is sort of like a colony?
Yeah. So it's a really complex community, and there's, you know, there's trillions of them living in our gut. And it's sort of the best way to think of it, and it's really what's happening, is they all sort of have a niche. And, you know, just like us, if we have certain things that we do or don't need to survive and do or don't need to be happy, it's the same for them. And so if we feed them, you know, certain groups of bacteria really like these plant-based foods, and other bacteria do really well when the host is fasting and there's no food, and others do really well when there's lots of simple sugars and fats. And so it's just, it's not that any groups completely go away. It's just that sort of some populations, we call it bloom. Mm-hmm. So some will expand and we'll see sort of more of what they do.
Okay, so what did you find when you compared the gut bacteria with the Western diet, the less healthy, high sugar, high fat diet versus the plant diet?
Yeah. And so this is where it gets a little complex. But so the big thing that we focused on was so not only how the bacteria change and how sort of the products that they make as a product of their metabolism and their chemistry changed when we gave them different diets, but we also then took a step farther and kind of looked at the host animal itself, and we looked at something called its epigenome. And so the best way to think of an epigenome is to think about how in the late 90s there was the Human Genome Project, and we sequenced, the scientific community sequenced the entire human genome, which is just all the collection of genes in a human body, to 99% completion. And everyone thought at that point that, you know, once we had the sequence for the human genome, you know, once we had the blueprint, that we would know everything about health and disease. And that turned out not to be the case. So we need more than just the blueprint. And now we know that there are lots of other factors involved in sort of regulating sort of who gets to read the blueprint and what happens when you read the blueprint. And so we study some of those proteins, and they're called histones, and they're sort of, the best way to think of them is sort of like a spool, and the DNA is the thread that wraps around the spool, and the spool can be modified in different ways, and how it's modified sort of affects how accessible the blueprint is to all the different machinery. And so what we looked at was how the bacteria, and more importantly, all these different products that they make that then get absorbed by the host and end up in our circulation, how those different products can actually interact with some of the machinery that affects these spools, or sort of affects how accessible our blueprint or our DNA is. And we found that that actually is affected differently on the different diets.
So you're saying it can affect the chemicals that affect the gene expression. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you found it can have a difference. There's an impact here. So what happened with, these were mice, right?
Yes, tested mice.
What happened with the mice who had the Western diet, the unhealthy diet?
Yeah, so it was totally surprising, and we were really excited to see it. But essentially we saw the way that we designed our study, where we had as a control, we had some animals that essentially grew up in a bubble. And they really do, there's a picture we sent you, and they actually are grown in a bubble, and this bubble is completely sterile on the inside. And those mice are a nice sort of control. So these mice have never seen any bacteria, any viruses, any fungi. They're completely naive to those things, and we kind of compared our mice that were exposed to bacteria back to that group. And when we had mice on a normal kind of healthy mouse diet, we saw a lot of changes in these kind of spool proteins, or the proteins that affect access to the genome. But then when we put our mice on this kind of Western unhealthy high sugar, high fat diet, those effects completely went away.
Completely went away. So yeah. That's pretty dramatic.
Yes, it was.
We're talking with Kim Krautkramer right now. We're talking about gut bacteria. Kim studies this at the UW-Madison as part of some new research looking at new information about how diet can affect the microbes living in our digestive system. And overall, what is the goal here in terms of how this research could affect things like genetic expression and health in people?
Yeah. So as a group of basic scientists, I work in John Deneau's lab, and to do this project, we work very closely with Federico Rey, and he's a bacterial physiologist, and we're more of the epigeneticists. And so what we wanted to do is, you know, we saw there's this really wonderful kind of wealth of research linking gut bacteria, gut bugs, to a lot of different human diseases, and a lot of them are metabolic diseases like diabetes and cardiovascular disease. And it's a lot of really nice correlative data, and we wanted to look at, to sort of understand more, what are the kind of smaller molecular mechanisms that are sort of driving these processes. And so that was our main goal with this work, and I think that's really where the potential is with this work. So now that we know that these things happen, we know that the gut bacteria can affect a lot of these disease processes and also health processes, you know, what are the actual molecular mechanisms? What are the specific factors, you know, kind of subcellular factors that are really driving these processes? And, you know, I think once we understand those, we have a lot of potential sort of for not only guiding, nutritional guidelines, but also, for learning better how to combat some of these disorders.
And it sounds like another thing you found was that it's not just the microbes themselves, you were saying this, but it's the way they metabolize and produce these. I read about short-chain fatty acids, and those can have a difference. And it sounds like you can take some of this, the byproduct of the microbes, put it in the sterile mouse without the gut biome, and something happens.
Yeah. So that was actually one of the coolest things. And again, we were really surprised when this actually worked. But we took a group of compounds that we know the bacteria make, and we also know that they make more of these compounds on a good, healthy mouse diet, and far less of these compounds that, as you said, are called short-chain fatty acids. When we put them on this kind of Western-type, high-fat, high-sugar diet. And so we wanted to see, you know, can we sort of mimic colonization, or can we mimic a mouse that has bacteria just by giving a germ-free mouse these compounds? And so we supplemented we put it in their water. And so we supplemented them for a number of weeks, and we looked at whether or not we could see the sort of the same epigenetic effects in the germ-free group that got supplemented. And we were able to sort of recapitulate about 75% of that pattern that we saw.
Wow. So it's so easy through the water, because we've done other interviews on this program talking about trying to harness some of those good gut bacteria and having to do less pleasant things like fecal transplants. So is this possible we could get this through water one day?
So I think we probably have a different palate than mice. And so these, if you were to smell some of these compounds, they don't smell very good. In fact, some of them are when you think of spoiled milk or really stinky cheeses, it's actually because of some of these compounds exactly, and also some that are similar. So we probably wouldn't want to drink water supplemented with them. But I think, you know, that's again kind of part of why we're really interested in sort of at the molecular level and at specific, you know, at the level of specific compounds and specific factors in cells, precisely for reasons like that, and why this becomes exciting, because if we can understand which specific compounds are involved, then we might be able to give them as a dietary supplement. It's a long way off, but that's part of our motivation.
That's what I was going to ask. How far off is some of this that we're talking about? It seems like the potential is enormous. But it also, you also have the sense it might not be tomorrow. I don't know. How quickly is the research moving that we might be able to treat some human diseases by looking at our gut biome?
So the research is moving at a frenetic pace. It's really hard to keep up. There are a handful of really new and exciting papers that are coming out in the literature, and really high quality papers every week. So the research is moving very quickly. However, I think, you know, it still could be years before we have some sort of a miracle solution, if ever. And it's mostly just because we're very complex organisms and these communities are very complex. And so I think we're making a lot of progress and we're making it quickly, but there's a lot to be learned.
Kim, thanks so much for telling us about it today.
Thank you.
That was Kim Kraut-Kramer. She's an MD, PhD student at UW-Madison studying gut bacteria and its function in the body, joining us there to talk about new research, new information about how diet can affect the microbes living in our digestive system.